Dad, a section of bonus material where we discuss our families, we discuss what motivates us, and Leda gets a chance to ask me a question. And so I hope you enjoy the bonus material. We'll see you next week. Let me ask you this, change the subject a little bit. So, I guess when we met, you didn't have kids.
No.
Back in the day. So, how old are your children now?
I have a 13-year-old son and a 10-year-old going on to 15, 16-year-old girl.
Yeah.
One of each. So, it's really great.
Yeah. So how do you, because you're not just a community, international community liaison, you're a mother and wife, and how do you kind of balance all of that? I mean, like, not that, I know for me it's a struggle at times, especially when you're working at home over the last year, that's been a little more of a struggle to kind of, and what would you want? What are some important things you'd want, Ladrian, and what's your daughter's name? My mind.
Kalina.
Kalina. Ladrian and Kalina. What is one or two things you want them to carry on or know or be?
Yeah. I mean, I want them to be able to have, you know, a lot of exposure to opportunities and to adventures. I think it's important for them to be able to see the world and to have those connections, especially with nature. I love the outdoors. I love spending time outside. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember taking the playpen when our son was just a few months old and sticking him in a tent, you know, camping somewhere. I can't remember where, but I was like, I can't believe I packed the playpen just so we could go camping and have him there. But just as access to opportunities like that, I'm not really so committed to necessarily all the extracurricular opportunities. I think we have a very competitive culture as it is. Especially the American culture is extremely competitive. So that was something that from the onset, being in competitive sports, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. it just seems like that is a huge drive for American parents to have the children being involved in some competitive sports. And that's not really something that I grew up with. My parents gave me a lot of opportunities to explore different things and to kind of pick the things that I was most comfortable or had a natural inclination to do. And they never really, I never felt like I had the pressure to be something that I wasn't or try to do something that they wanted me to do. So they allowed me to quit on things that I didn't want to do anymore. I wasn't very athletic from the beginning. So, you know, I tried a lot of different sports, but that wasn't my cup of tea. But I really love being in the Girl Scouts. That was very foundational for me. And it really created the sense of citizenship and a sense of community for me from a very young age. So those experiences are crucial for us. And I don't want them to really, I mean, I want them to see the opportunity to be a mom and to be a professional. Immigrating as well. When my mom first came to the United States, even though she had a master's degree in public health, most of her life in the U.S. was spent being a waitress and cleaning houses. So she was extremely underemployed. She didn't get an opportunity to really foster a career because when she was married, my dad just wanted her to be a stay-at-home mom and a housewife and never empowered her to pursue a career. And that was very, you know, very stereotypical male role that's mm-hmm. in Latino cultures oftentimes. And so even though she was highly educated, she didn't get to do anything with her degree. And I, you know, I vowed that I wasn't going to be that person, you know, and that whomever I was going to marry, poor Brian, poor that I was going to do pretty much, you know, I was going to pursue a career regardless. I remember feeling a lot of pressure when I first had my firstborn from, you know, from other friends about, you know, being a stay-at-home mom. And I did that. I ended up doing that for a few years, but I didn't feel fulfilled. I felt like I needed to be out. There was a greater contribution, and that my children weren't going to miss out. You know, they were ultimately going to still be well-rounded yeah. individuals. So I don't know if I've got it right, Rod, though.
Well, a lot of what you say, we've never been big sports parents, and we've never pushed our kids to be involved in a lot of extracurricular activities. And even if they were, we wanted to limit it to one or two things because we didn't want to be running all over all the time as a family. We didn't want busyness to be what defined our family. And so it sounds like we have a lot in common. Now, for me, so I'm a little bit older than you. I won't make you say how old you are, but I'm 50. A couple of weeks, I'll be 51.
And dang. So, okay, that's a lot older than me. I'm sorry, but... That's not just a little bit.
No. I was born in 70. So, but when I started my career, one of the things I regret is that our career lives were very centered around, especially geographically, opportunity-wise, where my career went. So instead of really focusing on Paige's career, like she had a degree in elementary education, she kind of followed me around wherever my career took me. And I have a lot of regret about that mm-hmm. because I don't feel like I did empower her to be all that she could be and have the fulfillment she wanted in a career. She doesn't hate me for it, I don't think, but but we've and it's hard at age 51. That's hard to fix. Like, it's hard to change, and so not hard to change. You just can't get time back, and so right. I can't go back and fix what's in the past. So tell me this: how has having a good partner? I know is really important in a lot of these life changes. And we've been through a lot of life changes in the last 12 to 15 years. And Paige has been such a beautiful partner in all of that. And how has Brian empowered you? So asking as a man, I'm asking you to woman-splain to me, how a man can be empowering and to this goal of yours to have that career. Has Brian helped you in that, empowered you in that, given you freedom in that? And what do you see from others that you wish they would stop doing to hinder women in their growth?
Well, that's a tough question. I can't really walk into Brian's mind. He doesn't mm-hmm. really have a lot of choice in what I end up doing. Unfortunately, he would say that too. I think he would say that he just lets me be. But he doesn't make me feel guilty about it either. I think that's the biggest part of it. I don't ever feel like he is looking down on me or that he has this expectation that I have to be everything. I'm a perfectionist anyway, so I'm an overachiever. So I end up always doing more than I should. That's just my natural inclination. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we had to grow up together. We got married very young, right out of college. We didn't realize probably, I don't know how old you and Paige were when you got married.
23.
Yeah. I was 22 yeah. and 23. Yeah. So yeah. we're right there. How many years have you been married?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. This is 27 or 28.
27. Yeah. So this, so yeah, in April.
27, 28 this year.
28. Yeah. We're going to be, it'll be 19 years of marriage in April. So we had to do a lot of growing up together. I know that a lot of our mindset has changed, you know, and I think that the fact that Brian was open to marrying someone that wasn't exactly like him, didn't have the same upbringing, and the same necessarily, you know, ethnic or racial background, but we did have similar value system, especially belief system.
Well, fair is fair. So, except that I had time to think about this. So, I've asked you a lot of questions. So, if you wanted to ask me one question, what would it be?
Wow. Okay. Yes. I mean, I think that when I think about you, I want to know what drives you, what motivates you. There are a lot of things that definitely you're into, and there's been a lot of transition in your life. I've seen a lot of that transition, and so there's been motivations to redefine yourself. That doesn't mean that you haven't stayed true to yourself. I like I mentioned, you've been very genuine in everything that you do, very transparent. But there has been a lot of really what I would call, I mean, what culturally we would call drastic changes. I mean, you went from being in a calling to being a pastor to saying, yeah, I don't want a pastor anymore. You now are serving in social services, you know, with affordable housing and looking at mitigating those barriers. And so what really motivates you? What drives you?
I would say empathy. It's hard for me to look at someone else who's going through a struggle that I could very, very easily be in and not see, and not have some re feel some responsibility to make a change, in that. One of my favorite stories that kind of motivates me is when Jeremiah was in junior high. We had just built a home for a family out in Regis O'Connor. It's the third house going in. And Jeremiah had gotten the highest grade in his English class that year. And so we had gone to the awards ceremony at the junior high to watch him get this award. And so he's getting his award. And right after he gets his award, the next person to get award is a young lady who lived in that third house on Regis O'Connor Boulevard, who was getting the highest grade in her English class, which was pretty cool. They're both there, they're both doing that. And so I was talking to Jeremiah about it afterwards. I said, one, it's pretty cool for you, but like she's only been speaking English 6 years, so it's really cool for her. Like she way outdid you. But come to find out, they were locker mates. They shared a locker together, and so at school, they were just friends. And he had no idea of the house we had built for, or where she lived, or and so it was so. I mean, that really brought it home to me that I could be in this situation, and what would I want somebody to do for me to help me not make my life easier, just to have a path, just to be able to see a way forward. And so empathy, and that was kind of in my whole transition from ministry to what I'm doing now is. I wanted to be more hands-on with people. I wanted my life to be more hands-on in the community. And so that's what we did. And to speak to how you spoke of Brian, Paige has always been, luckily, you know, that could have been disastrous if we were on separate pages in our life and she wanted to go one way and I wanted to go another. But we were in tune with each other and had long conversations, and we're headed in the same direction. And it was, you know, when without getting into, we went from our income was cut in half immediately. We went from living in a house that met our needs to a tiny little two-bedroom house for a while. We never missed any of that. We felt like we were where we needed to be. And we've never really looked back from that. And having a good partner and being able to feel like I can make a difference in the community somehow. Not that it's not frustrating, and I don't, you know how it is. Rules, regulations, all that stuff, politics makes right. everything complicated when all you want to do is make sure somebody has a place to live. But, but I always think about how would I fight through all of that bureaucracy and fight through all of that paperwork if I didn't speak the language and I was in a strange community and I was trying to make a life, I'd want somebody to help me. And so we've always tried to do that for family. So I guess empathy and a good partnership.
And how do you build that empathy? I mean, how do you have a higher level of emotional intelligence, what I would call emotional quotient, because
I don't know. I've always been a little that way. I'm probably, I describe myself as pessimistically hopeful these days. 'Cause you know, the older you get, you always want to make a difference. And then the older you get, you feel like I'm not going to make any difference. So rah, rah, rah. You get cranky, but, I don't know how you build it other than like any spiritual, emotional, physical practice. Is you just have to practice it. And you have to, the biggest way to build it isn't, you're not going to read a book and change. You're not going to, you have to be engulfed in it. You have to build relationships and broaden your community. You know, when we picked, and I feel you probably, when we, a lot of times when people pick schools, they look for the best education or the best. We pick schools based on diversity, where our kids would be surrounded by the most diversity, because we want them to be. And both of our kids are very empathetic. And so I don't know if it's a genetic flaw we've passed on to them or it's because we put them in positions where they could practice that and see others. And so, but it's, I don't know how you start building it other than to immerse yourself in somebody else's life. And really, you have to see people as
human. I think for that, you have to be incredibly, right. I think you have to be incredibly intentional at that point.
Yeah.
There is a higher level of intentionality. I think we get into a lot of conversations about that, you know, when we talk about equity and inclusion, and people don't realize that you cannot include, if people are being excluded because that's just the barriers are there, organically favor, you know, right. a certain group over another, then you really have to create a culture of intentionality surrounding equity and inclusion. You can't not just make it happen. I think you've been really successful at that with your current endeavor with Habitat for Humanity. I've just been really impressed at the ways that you've reached out to ensure that everyone that wants that opportunity has access to that opportunity. Again, can't control if they don't do the things that they're supposed to do to get access to that. But if you give them the fact that they have access to those opportunities and you're mitigating the barriers takes a higher level of intentionality than in regular service provision.
Right. Yeah. It's not going to happen accidentally, for sure.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Well,
I won't keep you all day.
No, I won't keep you all day because I know somebody's waiting to call you because you're the city's international communities liaison. You're the only person that can fix it. But I do just want to say thanks. And while we don't get a chance to say it often enough, I really do appreciate your partnership in the community.